You're listening to an RNIB Connect Radio podcast.
You're listening to the Happy Hour on RNIB Connect Radio. Now, today we're going to share another personal story, and we're joined by Neil Villanes, who is a musician who also happens to have a background in IT and counseling, and he also happens to be registered severely sight impaired. And Neil joins us now. It is really nice speaking with you today.
Thank you, and thanks for having me on. And hello, everyone.
Well, Neil, let's start in 2016. You suffered a stroke which severely impacted your vision.
Yeah, so 2016 was that was the worst year ever, to be honest. I'd lost my partner suddenly in January of that year. I was just doing stuff in the garden. I've got quite a large garden. So I was painting the fence, the shed and everything. And then the next day, it was I wasn't seeing right at all. It was the only way I can describe it is being in brilliant sunshine and then walking indoors. I had that kind of glare in my eyes, but it wasn't going. So I went up to the opticians and they did a couple of tests and they said there was something not looking right. And they phoned me back about within half an hour and said I'd have to go to the hospital because it looked like I'd had a hemorrhage or something in my eye. But I was up to other things by that point, so I said no, I'll go to the hospital tomorrow. To be honest, I wasn't too concerned about it. It was crazy because I could still see at that point. But so I went up to the hospital. They thought it was just like an infection or something, and it would clear within a week. Ever since I was little, I'd only had really good sight in my right eye. My left eye was always very weak since I was a child, so much so that when I was younger I had to endure a patch on my right eye to try and get my left eye working better. But yeah, so this was my right eye that was playing up, which wasn't good. After the week, it was severely worse. They started doing other tests and things, and my dad had been diagnosed as well around about the same time with a brain tumour. I got scanned for that, but so that obviously came back clear. So within a month or two, pretty much all the sight in my right eye had gone. It's just like shadows and light grey. You know, I always find it hard to describe it to people when people ask what I can see. I can see better, a little bit better out of my left eye now, but I can't read or anything. You know, I have to use magnifiers and things. So it has had a huge impact on me. They only found out I'd had a stroke about 6 months later. When I got told, it was just like, oh, okay. but there'd been so much going on that year. It was just one more thing to deal with, to be honest.
You had such a difficult year. Like, what got you through it emotionally, mentally? Like, how did you even get through all of that? You're grieving your partner passing away. Then you're having all these health issues. Your father has health issues. Then you get this diagnosis that just comes out of nowhere.
I don't know, to be honest. I did come pretty near to crumbling a couple of times. You know, I'll be honest, I started drinking quite heavily just to block everything out. I was on antidepressants and I was on so many tablets. I think at one point I was on about 27 tablets a day or something because I had other health issues with a stomach complaint as well. So I just kind of got on with it, to be fair. Music was good for me. I got back into my music quite quickly as a kind of output for what I was feeling a lot. And I listened to music religiously. I listened to tons of music. It was just crazy. You know, there was so much going on. I can't actually pinpoint what made me get through it, though. My family, obviously, and friends were huge support. I'm quite a spiritual person, shall we say, and there was a couple of strange things happened, you know, that I can't explain that gave me comfort.
What sort of things?
A lot of people say about white feathers. I was finding them everywhere. I've got them in a box. I've got about 30. And I'm talking about in my house, you know. So I would go into the wardrobe to get a shirt out and it'd be a white feather. I went out to put stuff in the bucket one night and it must have been midnight, you know, midnight or, you know, early hours in the morning anyway. It was still, there wasn't a breath of air. It was summer. And a white feather just floated down from nowhere and landed on my shoulder. The weirdest one was my late partner's cousin had gone to a medium a message had come through, apparently, and it was, well, it said, you know, why is Neil not here? I thought he would have been here. And I had toyed with the idea of going to one, but it kind of scares me a little bit, you know, that. So one of the messages was, tell him to watch out for the sunflowers in August. So I'd had a gardener doing some work in my garden, just tidying, you know, cutting the hedge, tidying pots, de-weeding and things, because I hate gardening. I've got two windows at the front of my house, so there was one flower pot under each one. So he took all the weeds out and that, and it was all like fresh soil and things. But in one of them, there was this tiny little green shoot. And I was like, oh, I wonder what that is. And then I just had this feeling. So I left it. I didn't do anything with it. And the next day, there was a little green shoot growing in the other pot. Quite quickly, it became apparent there were actually sunflowers that were growing. Sunflowers had never been grown in my back garden or my front garden, whatever. And these two, they grew really tall in that. And I actually measured them. And one of them was 6'4", which was my partner's height. And one was 5'9", which is my height. Yeah, I can't explain that one at all. It was just so random. And it was nice. But, you know, to have got that second hand from a medium, and then to actually see that happening, it was just incredible, you know. So comforting, but strange as well.
No, it makes sense. And thank you so much for sharing. And I would love to talk a little bit about somewhere else you got support. I know you reached out to the charity Seascape.
Yeah, funnily enough, we were just talking about this yesterday. I was out with a social group that I'm in for people with sight problems. And I can't remember how that came about. I think I must have got referred by the hospital or something. And they were great. They were really good. So I got, you know, obviously my canes, my white cane and magnifiers, things like that, visors, you know, to block sunlight. Yeah, and I ended up doing a bit of volunteering for them as well. They used to have a IT drop-in centre. It didn't last too long. I think funding got stopped or something for it. So I was still going to Seascape regularly because they were trying to find alternative employment for me. I'd worked all my days. I've done so many things. I've been a civil servant. I've worked in IT. I ran a bar. Worked in a call centre for 20 years. So, but computer work was really, you know, it would have been impossible. There were so many systems you needed to go into that even magnification, it would have made me ill. You know, it would have put so much stress on my eyes. I do find that even now a lot of the time, even when I'm using my iPad or doing my music, that I really have to limit my time because a lot of the time I feel I'm getting like screen burn on my eyes. So while we were there and they were talking about, you know, possible work that I could do, I'd kind of mentioned the idea of counselling. The girl at Seascape, yeah, she got me in touch with Fife College and I signed up for an introduction to counselling course. The follow-on from that was the intermediate counselling. When you did that, you were automatically into the HNC course, which was full-time at Fife College in Kirkcaldy. So I did that, and I loved it. I met so many good people, and the tutors were fantastic. Made a lot of good friends that I still keep in touch with. And I got really good results from it. And the feedback I was getting was that I was very gifted at it and very natural, because I kind of put people at ease, apparently. But so I did that, and I got onto the HND, which was all I needed to do to get my counselling qualification. But then COVID came, and the colleges were shut, so it was all the classes were done via Zoom. It wasn't ideal for me because I had a scribe that took notes for me. She sat in the classes with me when we were actually physically in the colleges. But she would also be online during these classes. But it was all new tutors, and one of them in particular was just so fast with, you know, doing PowerPoint presentations and things on screen, and things were just zipping past me, vroom, 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 you know, and I couldn't keep up with it, to be honest. And I was also going through other issues. I'd suffered for a few years with a thing called diverticular disease, which is a stomach problem. And it's seen me hospitalised a couple of times. I'm a lot better at it now. I had to go in for a major operation about 4 years ago. That seems to have resolved it. So I pulled out of the HND course. So I never actually qualified as a counsellor, but it's maybe something that I might look at in the future. I don't know, though.
Well, Neil, let's talk about your passion, music. How would you describe your style?
I can't. I dabble in everything, to be honest. I've been in music since I was at high school, so probably 40 odd years, you know. The music I listen to mainly is electronic synthesizer music, like from the 80s, you know, Orchestra Maneuver in the Dark, Human League, that sort of thing. That's what I tend to write. It's all very keyboard driven. Fully realize that I am not the best musician or singer in the world. So I persevere. You know, it takes longer now with my sight as well. It takes double the amount of time because some of the, you know, obviously there's no accessibility issues built into the stuff that that I use, like my hard drive, disc recorder and things. You can't blow up the screen. It's a tiny little LED screen. So I'm you know, hunched over it with a magnifier and everything. I have started using AI on my music, which, you know, it's a Marmite thing. A lot of folk are totally hate it. You know, a lot of folk are like it. The way I see it is there's people that get AI to write their songs for them, basically. You know, they type in, write me a song about being happy on a sunny day, hit the button, the song comes out, you know, and then they do another one. So I know people that claim to have written like 300 songs and 2 days or whatever, which is just nonsense. It's absolutely nonsense. All my music is home recorded and then I give it the AI treatment so it performs it better and I can change the style as well. So this year alone, I've done like an orchestral style concept album based on an old film called Picnic at Hanging Rock, which I've always loved the movie. The intention was I'd got involved with a local theatre group about 8 years ago maybe. And they were doing a production of it, and I offered to write some music for it. It was very, very electronic. You know, gave them the AI treatment, so it sounded like a full orchestra with choirs and things. It blew me away. It was really, really, you know, a revelation, to be honest. You know, because obviously, even though the AI took control of it, it was still recognisably my music with the chords and the melodies and things. So from there, I've done further experimentation with jazz on a release this year, and electronic chill out music, which I've got an ongoing series of releases called Seasons. It's four tracks called Spring, Summer, Autumn and Winter, and they were all originally released 3 years ago maybe, and they're completely home recorded. They are the original versions. There's been an EP of an orchestral version of it, the jazz version, the chill out version. I've got a new single out at the moment called Everything You Said. I've got music scheduled all the way up till December 2027, to be honest. I do go through phases though when I'm just lost, you know, when I have no inspiration whatsoever. When I get a good phase, when I'm feeling very creative and doing stuff, I tend to batter it out, if you know what I mean. So I've built up a really good stockpile, and I've got an album planned for the end of the year, which is called 2026, which is just a kind of retrospective of this year. You know, it's a track from each month that I've released, kind of thing. But I thought I had it all locked down and ready to go, but I've pulled it already because I want to juggle about the track list, putting another one on it. An older one of mine, actually, that I'm going to overdub. I was going to re-record the full thing, but the song means so much to me that I don't want to change my singing or anything, so I'm just going to put a little bit, extra bits and pieces in. It's sounding good so far.
Because you mentioned you sometimes go through, like, creative slumps. Do you have any, like, anything you maybe do to try and get yourself out of a creative slump?
Sometimes I'll force myself to come in my studio and put the keyboards on and try and, you know, do stuff. Or I'll pick up my iPad. I've got a great app on my iPad that I can write on as well. But, you know, I can be inspired by anything. The way I'm feeling, something funny that happens, memories, new music that I listen to can inspire me a lot. You know, if my favourite bands are that bring out a new album, you know, sometimes that gives me the kick, you know, and I'm like, oh yes, you know, I can do this. So
you're obviously, you know, so passionate about the music you create, and you said you listen to a lot of artists as well, but I think when we were messaging before, you mentioned that you didn't really seriously get into music until like end of 2015, around 2016. So around the time when all the stuff was really going down with your health and in your life, why yeah. did you never really fully immerse yourself before that?
Prior to that, I'd been in a pretty bad relationship for about 9 years for most of my 30s. So I was writing and recording then. I just didn't know what to do with the stuff, to be honest. And then after that was over and I'd got myself, you know, I'd moved into my new home and things. And I thought, yeah, I'm going to give this another go. And my partner at the time, Robert, he said, oh, you need to do some of this. You need to do some of this. It was him that actually forced me to do it. And it was... Well, it was ironic that the first track that I had a track, and it was on YouTube, and it was called Discotheque, and it actually got to number one on the unsigned global artist chart, which is now defunct, that thing. So I was going to bring that out as my first single, but I never. So I had another thing written called Passing Thoughts, which I really liked, and I said, yeah, we'll do that as the single. So I'd signed up to a distributor and we uploaded the track, and the release date was the 25th of January. Yeah, 25th of January 2016. And that's the day that my partner passed away, unfortunately. So and the lyrics were, everyone that heard it said, you know, how could you do that? The lyrics were very deep and, you know, it sounded like I was singing about loss and grief and things, but I wasn't, you know, because I'd written it before all that happened. I had a couple more things that were ready to go. So after a while, I got them going. But then when my sight and that went, and my dad's health, and my dad passed away as well, unfortunately, through his brain tumour, I pulled everything. I just didn't want to know anymore, so I took everything down, and that was it. So I only really got back in it about 3 years ago. I thought, yeah, I've got all these keyboards sitting taking up space, gathering dust basically. So I just really got back in it, and I'm glad I did. You know, it's the one kind of constant thing in my life, you know, that keeps me sane in a way, you know, because it is a good output for whatever I'm feeling at the time, you know. So,
And how do you adapt things? Because I know you don't really have that much side. So does that impact how you produce and make your music at the moment as well?
Well, yeah, it takes longer. Like I said, you know, reading little LED displays on keyboards and my hard drive recorder is horrific, you know. And like I've said before, I do have to try and limit my time, screen time and things. So I've got my magnifiers and that. I use an app on my iPad called Caustic 3. Well, it's great. You know, it's got like 9 or 10 virtual keyboards and things, and you can program it in note by note. So you can play it manually, or you can put it in note by note, build your chords up that way, change the time and program the drums one beat at a time and things. It takes a while, but no, it's very handy. So that will give me a guideline, and then I'll overdub it a lot of the time where, you know, actually playing real keyboards and things on top of it. There's a couple of things that I've got out on Spotify and iTunes and that are basically just everything is played straight, you know, there's no programming or anything. So I'll have the drum machine going and then I'll play the piano over it, and then I'll have layered strings and things and then done my singing on it. But like I said, I am tending to use AI more now to get that polished sound. So I'll record the song as is so that I'm happy with it, and then give it an AI treatment so that it just sounds far better than I could ever hope to do on my own, basically.
Well, if you had to describe the impact music had on your life, what would you say?
Oh, just crazy. You know, I listen to such a wide variety of stuff as well. You know, I mean, obviously it is 80s stuff that I like best, but the good thing is, you know, people say, oh, you're stuck in the 80s, but all the bands that I like, they're still going, they're still touring, still bringing out new albums and things. I do listen to varied stuff, so I could go from David Bowie to Sarah Brightman, you know, in one day. I like some classical music. Prince, I touched on him earlier, was a massive influence for me, and all the other people that he worked with, including one in particular, a singer called Jill Jones. She was the co-lead vocalist on Prince's 1999 single, and she was in his film Purple Rain and things. Well, years ago, I set up a website for her. This was late 90s kind of thing. And we became friends. We've never met. We spoke on the phone quite a lot and things. And she was in London at the end of the 80s recording some demos that were intended for a second album of hers that never came out. By chance, I had an acquaintance that was working in that studio, the recording studio in London, where she did them. So they managed to get me a copy, a tape of some of the songs that she'd recorded. So I had that, and I was like, oh my word, you know, they never ever got released. And I had that tape for years and years, and I had the foresight, thankfully, many years ago to transfer it onto my computer, you know, so I had digital copies and that. And we spoke, me and Jill had spoken, like I said, over the years, and I kept saying to her, bring this out, bring this out, bring this out. And there was never any, you know, real interest in it. And then I just bit the bullet and I was like, well, I've set up my own label kind of thing through my distributor, so why don't we bring it out? So we did. So we brought out 8 of those songs. I'd cleaned them up, remastered them and that. And the album was called The London Sessions. So that came out on April 2024, I think. And that went down really well. Got a lot of good response in that. So that was one of my proudest moments, actually, getting those songs out for her as well. The opportunity to work with someone that you've admired and is one of your favourite artists for so many years was just like, you don't get that every day. I would urge anyone to listen to that album. Basically, The London Sessions by Jill Jones.
That's amazing. But since you were, obviously we're talking with Neil, and this is, I guess, the final question is, how do we listen to you? Where can we find your music?
My stuff's on Spotify. Some of it's on iTunes, Amazon Music, YouTube Music. Pretty much all the streaming and download stores, it's there. If you want to find my music on Spotify or iTunes or whatever, search for Neil Billiness, and my surname is spelled B-I-L-L-I-N-N-E-S-S.
Brilliant. Well, Neil, it's been fantastic speaking with you today on the Happy Hour.
For more interviews, features and shows, go to your favourite podcast provider and search for RNIB Connect Radio.